All right, so we are in the book of Ruth. So much lighter than the book of Judges. So just it's a good transition into this. All right, so hoping to get through kind of just at least the introduction tonight. So title of the book, any guesses on where we get the title from? Yeah, Ruth, right? Yeah, so one of the main characters of the book. And this is named after Ruth, the Moabitess, right? And it's actually the only Old Testament book named after a non-Israelite, even though she kind of essentially becomes one in a sense later on, but you understand kind of that point. And it's interesting, just the placement of Ruth in our Bibles compared to like the Hebrew Bible, it's actually a little different. Okay, so in our Bibles, Ruth follows Judges, as we just saw, and that's significant. Because Ruth continues kind of the storyline of Judges, in a sense, okay? And kind of by bridging the gap from the time period of the Judges to, like, the era of the monarchy, right, is kind of what's happening. And it does this by beginning to show that the Davidic dynasty is true and legitimate, and it is the kingship that you need, okay? So remember, Judges was pointing us to this need for a king, and Ruth starts to reveal kind of the answer to that. Okay, that it's going to be through the Davidic dynasty. It's going to be through the line of David. Okay? But in the Hebrew Bible, Ruth often actually follows the book of Proverbs. All right, which is interesting. And any guesses why it would do that? Think of any connections there? Can you think of how Proverbs ends? Yeah, the Proverbs 31 woman, right? And then kind of then you have Ruth, right? And that's in the Jews' mind, that's kind of like the prototypical Proverbs 31 woman is Ruth. And so it's kind of like you have the description of the woman in Proverbs 31. And then here's like the real life example in Ruth, right? So it's kind of a fitting thing, interesting thing. So both work, right? Both work. But I thought that was interesting. Authorship. Like Judges in some of the other books, we don't know for sure who the author is. And with Ruth, the suggestions are kind of all over the map. The Jewish Talmud traditionally held that Samuel was the author. Some kind of go against that, saying because the genealogy at the end seems to indicate like that David was king or important at that time. And so they're kind of like, well, Samuel died before he actually became king. But if you know like the story of that, like Samuel actually anointed David, so he knew he'd be king, so that doesn't really fly. So it's possible it could be written by Samuel. Others also suggest like the lack of any mention of like Solomon or anything might indicate it's written before the time of Solomon as well. And so it could have been written by Samuel or at least someone maybe slightly before or during the time of David's reign, something like that. But again, we don't know for sure, so we can't be dogmatic on that. And some people argue for a little bit later writing, and they have some good points and all that as well. But overall, we're just not sure. Okay. But we know that like it's still inspired by God, and so he's ultimately the ultimate author of all scripture, and so we have that comfort in that. The date kind of ties in with your view of the author, right? The date of writing and all that, and so if it is kind of similar during the reign, early part of David's reign or something, there's that. But again, we can't be dogmatic on that. All right, historical context, okay? And so we're just going to talk about a couple things here that you need to know that will kind of help set the stage for the book of Ruth. And so the first thing we need to know is about the Moabites and their background. And so if you're part of that survey of the Torah, hopefully you remember the background of the Moabites. Do you remember their background? Who are they descendants of? We actually mentioned him a little bit earlier tonight. No, putting you guys to the test, Bible trivia. Not Levites. Starts with an L. Rhymes with got. Lot, yeah. So Lot, right? Like, so if you remember, back in Genesis, like after they flee Sodom and Gomorrah, that whole situation, Lot and his daughters flee, all that, and they end up settling in the hills outside of like town, and so they're all isolated, and his daughters are like, well, how are we supposed to have kids? We're so isolated. And you remember their kind of messed up plan that they make. They're like, well, we'll just get Lot drunk and sleep with him, and then we'll have babies through that, right? Like, and they do it, and that works for them, right? Like, and one of the kids' names is Moab, right? And kind of the name is, who is my father, right? That kind of weird. Like, oh, yeah, who is your father, right? Kind of a thing. And it's a fitting and awkward name. But kind of the point, remember when we talked about that back in Genesis, kind of the point of that, though, was in Israel, there was then a huge stigma that was attached to being a Moabite, right? Because, like, oh, you're part of those people, right? You're part of those people. And so Ruth, being a Moabite, is a big deal, right? That's a big deal. And so she would have been looked down upon so much for being a Moabite. And you'll see, like, even people mention that, right? Like, oh, she's a Moabite, right? Like, don't, like, worry about her. She's a Moabite. Like, that's bad. And so, and that's what you see throughout the book. And so, like, no one almost, like, really likes her except for who? Boaz, right? Boaz. And so that, again, makes him kind of stand out, right? As he's the only one that kind of does, like, not worry about that Moabite status, all that. And he obviously likes her. All right. So we need to understand that, right? Understand that background. The second thing we need to kind of briefly talk about here, which will come up later on in the book, is concerning some of the laws of the Old Testament, and specifically to know a little bit about the laws of property redemption and levirate marriage. Okay, so write this down. So property redemption and levirate marriage. This is actually found in Leviticus 25, this, and Deuteronomy 25. So it's the 225, so it makes it easy on us. All right, so you have, you need to understand property redemption and levirate marriage. And these, you can go a lot more in detail, but we'll just give a little basic here, quick talk about this. So in regards to property redemption, okay, Leviticus 25, what this talks about is that the reality is, every Israelite family was assigned kind of a portion of land, okay? They were assigned a portion of land, and the goal was for that land to stay within the family forever, okay? That was really what it was. However, sometimes situations might arise where you would, like, sell the land or would have to give it up for some reason, but this was always only intended to be temporary, right? It's supposed to be temporary. And according to Leviticus 25, so this property redemption, is that during certain times, your closest relative could actually redeem your property back to you. Okay, so they could help you out and kind of get your property back so that it stays in the family. Okay, and so there's this concept, there's laws concerning that. And then, so that's kind of basics of property redemption. Levirate marriage, that's in Deuteronomy 25. And this wasn't just about redeeming property, but also about redeeming your family, okay? Because you don't want your family line to disappear. And so this was kind of the whole thing. Maybe you've heard before, right? Like if a man was married and he died without any children, then his brother would kind of then step up if he was able, right, to marry the widow of his brother and produce heirs to keep the family line going, right? That's kind of this levirate marriage. But the super significant thing with the levirate marriage is that in doing so, you would really be giving yourself up, right? Like kind of by your name and status, because you are really just substituting for your brother. And so like the property and stuff doesn't now go in your name. It is maintained in your brother's name. Okay? Like, so you're continuing your brother's line. And this is why it was primarily to take place within like the immediate family, like between brothers, okay? This was a big deal. This wasn't a light thing, okay? And so keep those two things in mind, okay, because they will come into play in chapter 4. And Boaz is going to utilize both of those and kind of combine them, like package these two, which are normally kind of distinct things, but he kind of packaged them together to kind of make this intricate legal argument, right? Like to end up kind of working out his purpose there and everything. So, and it's impactful, it's significant when he does it, okay? When we get to that. But keep that in mind. All right, and then point five here, the theme of the book. So the theme of the book. We'll go with here, the God who preserves a remnant. The God who preserves a remnant. God who preserves a remnant. And so we just made abundantly clear the time the Judges was very dark in Israel's history. And it would be easy to just think that everyone was completely wicked and all had turned their backs on the Lord. However, what Ruth shows us is that there were still some who were faithful to the Lord in the midst of all that darkness, right? Because as we'll get to in a moment, verse 1 of chapter 1 of Ruth, it's in the days when the judges ruled, okay? So this is taking place during the time of the judges, okay? And so there was a faithful remnant, and this will be really a recurring theme all throughout, like, the Old Testament, that even in the darkest times, God is preserving a remnant who is faithful to him, okay? Like, you have that time and time again in the Old Testament. It seems like even you had prophets, right? Like, Elijah's like, I'm the only one. He's like, nope, I got people, right? Like, I got people. There's faithful people there. And so, like, it's all the time, right? There's a faithful remnant, and we see God preserving that here. And really, this contrast between Ruth and Judges is intentional, okay? And, like, I've heard kind of people use the example, like Ruth is kind of like the diamond amidst the dark backdrop of Judges, okay? And so, if you've ever been to like a jewelry store or seen like a commercial on TV for diamonds, what do they often do when showing you a diamond? Yeah, they put it like on a dark backdrop. Why?
To show it off.
Yeah, it makes the diamond stand out like much more in contrast, right? They just put it like on a clear background. You're like, wait, what am I looking at? Right? But no, like on the dark backdrop, it makes it seem brighter, shines better, like all this stuff, right? And so in the same way, Judges is that kind of nightmare, dark backdrop. But in the midst of this darkness, you have this beautiful love story that is the bright spot, right? And it causes you to focus where? On the story of Ruth, right? And so really, the wickedness of Judges amplifies the beauty of Ruth, right? That's what we see. And again, as we just came through the chapters we did in Judges, you're like, man, that's rough. And then you have Ruth, and you're like, oh man, this is different, right? It's stark. It's amazing how different it is, right? Because you have, again, in Judges, you have the people that were just like time violation after violation. You're like, oh my gosh, they're just digging themselves deeper, deeper, deeper. And then you get to Ruth, and you're like, well, that's a good choice. That's a good choice. You know, like, and like doing better, right? Like you have Boaz and Ruth, like who are doing great things, right? Trying to honor the Lord, right? So it's all good with that. And also, in this book, we also see how God's Genesis 3:15 plan continues to move forward through this faithful remnant of Ruth and Boaz. And so really, as kind of mentioned before, like it ends pointing to the Davidic dynasty. And so Judges was making clear you need a king, and Ruth shows that the Davidic dynasty is the kingship that is needed. Okay, it's the kingship that is needed. And so God is moving history towards the Messiah, right? The true king from the Davidic dynasty who could bring the leadership and reform the nation desperately needs. Okay, that's where we're heading. That's what's going on. All right, and then you have the structure of the book there. So kind of this prologue, then like kind of four acts, you could say, and then an epilogue there at the end, okay? All right, let's try to get through this prologue, all right? Let's get through this. All right, so kind of exposition of Ruth, prologue, tragedy in Moab. So the first five verses, main point kind of is disaster strikes. And these opening verses set the scene, give us kind of this background leading up to our main story. And so, as I mentioned before, the first words make it clear this is happening in the time of the judges. But then we also find out another piece of information here. There was what in the land?
Famine.
All right. And real quick, like, why do you think there was famine in the land during this time? Just happenstance, huh? Yeah, judgment, right? Because if you remember, like, back in Deuteronomy 28, that listed the blessings and curses of the law, that if you obeyed the law, there was blessing. If you disobeyed, there was curses. And one of the curses was famine, okay? There's drought, famine, all that, right? And so from what we've seen in the time of Judges the past couple of weeks, what do you think they're often under? Blessings or curses? Curses, right? Like, it was not a good time. And so famine being one of those things, it makes sense, right, that this is happening. And so there is famine in land, and so you now have this guy come on the scene, a man of Bethlehem. So, hey, Bethlehem's there again. So, and Bethlehem's actually going to be central to this whole story. That's where all this is taking place. Most of this is taking place, right, is in the town of Bethlehem. And so, again, we see that connection. The last two stories of Judges had a connection to Bethlehem, but in not great ways. But then in this time, you get like kind of a good story in Bethlehem, okay? And again, points to Ruth being kind of that bright spot in contrast to the darkness, okay? So terrible things have happened in connection with Bethlehem, but now something beautiful will be connected with this town as well, okay? All right, so you have this man, he takes his wife and two sons and leaves Israel, go to Moab because of this famine. But what happens while they're there? Yeah, like everyone starts dying, right? It's not good. So he dies, and then his two sons take wives from the Moabites, which, was that what they were supposed to do? No, right? That wasn't a good thing. But then the two sons die as well. So then all that's left is the wife, whose name is Naomi, and then the two daughters-in-law, Orpah and Ruth. I always want to say Oprah, so if I say it, I'm sorry, but it's Orpah. So, but just bear with me if I say Oprah at some point. But yeah, so it's just them left, right? And they're left in a tough situation, right? They have no husbands, right? Like all this has happened. They moved to this area, now everyone's dead. All that. So not a good situation. This is a disaster, right? But notice also real quick, what was the name of the man, by the way? Yeah, Elimelech or Elimelech, however you want to pronounce it. And in Hebrew, this name means my God is king. Okay, my God is king. And remember, what was Judges pointing us to? You need a what? King. Right? And so we see from even how people were naming like their children and everything, that they knew they needed a king. Okay, they knew they needed a king, and so there was hope. Okay, there was hope. We need a king. There's hope there. But even though there's hope, as we're seeing in this prologue, that hope is filled with what? It's filled with curse, death, sin, right? Like, and that's where our story begins, all right? Kind of setting that stage there, okay? All right. Let's see. And I think we'll just stop there for today. So don't think I have enough time to get through the rest of chapter one. But that sets our stage, right? So dark for the moment, but it'll get better, right? So it's just setting that stage for everything. And so next week we'll finish off Ruth and then hopefully get into 1 Samuel as well. All right. Sounds good.